like that. This gross material body made of five elements is already under the control of eternal time and karma and the modes of nature. How then can it, being already in the jaws of the serpent, protect others? How can this body of yours give protection if this body of yours is also under the control of time, as is their body under the control of time? Wake up. The controller is time. So that the theme consoling, it has just three more verses. This is the other one that's the often quoted verse. Ahastani sahastanam apadani chatuspadam. Those who are devoid of hands are praying for those who have no hands. Those who are those devoid of legs are praying for those four-legged. The weak are the subsistence for the strong. Darwinian evolution, right? Survival of the fittest. Here it is, right? The Bhagavad Gita. And the general rule holds that one living being is food for another living being. Jivo jivasya jivanam. You've heard that phrase before from the Bhagavad Gita. Right here, chapter 13, Narada's instructing, one living entity is food for another living entity, and the weak are subsistence for the strong. Who knows, maybe Charles Darwin read Srimad Bhagavatam. I doubt it, but it's actually common sense experience of life. So, the theme is one should not make the mistake of trying to check that which is the plan of the Lord. But rather, one should try, within the codes of Dharma, to achieve what this human form of life is designed to achieve, and that is to go beyond this cycle and this struggle. While we're in the struggle, we should live in the mode of goodness. We should live according to the codes of Dharma. We should live a virtuous, proper, righteous life. And we should inwardly cultivate Krishna consciousness very, very carefully. That's our prime human mission. Prabhupada writes, there's no possibility of checking this tendency, this survival of the fittest tendency, by any artificial means under material conditions. It can be checked only by awakening the spiritual sense of the human being by practice of spiritual regulations. Prabhupada said this the same way in our 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita study. Therefore, O King, final instruction, you should look to the Supreme Lord only, who is one without a second, and who manifests himself by different energies, and is both within and without. It goes on, chapter goes on with Narada explaining to Maharaj Yudhisthira and to Sanjaya exactly what Dhritarashtra is doing right now. He says, this is just a chapter summary to the close. He's in the forest already, so don't go and try to find him, because in 4 or 5 days, it's over for Dhritarashtra. Because he's going to, by a combined effort of bodily regulation, that is, just drinking water only, so Dhritarashtra had great capacity for austerities, he'll sustain himself just by drinking water, and he'll undergo this Agnihotra Yajna process of sacrifice, and he'll sit in the Ashtanga Yoga process and completely withdraw his senses from activity into their subtle state, and amalgamate the subtle state into the mind, and the mind into the Mahatattva, and then he'll fix his consciousness upon the personality of Godhead, and in that state, in the intensity of his concentration will be so strong that his body will burst into flames. And sure enough, it did. He was so... Dhritarashtra was a pretty intense person. We couldn't do that. I challenge anyone here. Go to the forest in 4 or 5 days, have your body self-ignite, and go back to Godhead. You can't do it. So Dhritarashtra was an intense person. Now what particular kind of liberation he achieved is unspecified. It certainly wasn't one of developed rasa with loving service to the Supreme Lord. But we research in the chapter, there's a little discussion when I gave this seminar once before. It's possible by that process that Dhritarashtra followed that one can, by that process, by the same series of events, attain a heavenly planet. And Prabhupada seems to indicate that that might happen for some yogis. But in a careful review, it says it in 2 or 3 places, he achieved liberation. So one of their 5 kinds of liberation, so it's unspecified which of the 5, is some kind of liberation. And when that happened, and that, so just the last part of this chapter, when that happened, Gandhari saw it. Gandhari was there, and she saw the body of her beloved husband just ignite. And when that happened, she felt 2 things simultaneously. She felt great grief, and she felt great loneliness. But she steadied her intelligence, and with her intelligence, she steadied her mind. And because throughout her life she was always dharmic, very, very, very religious, perfectly chaste and religious lady, that ruled her life. Just like this example given by Narada that the cow is controlled by the rope. He and Ram. So she knew what to do. Her mind was very agitated. She had lost her sons. She had lost the kingdom. She had lost her dignity. She had lost everything. And now the only thing remaining was the body of her husband, and that was gone too. So she steadied her mind and entered into the fire. And whatever destination was achieved by Dhritarashtra, that destination was achieved by Gandhari. And then Vidura saw both of those things happen. And Vidura also had mixed feelings. Remember, we've heard Prabhupada described Vidura as being a liberated soul beyond the influence of the modes of nature, having no material contamination. And he had feelings too. And one feeling was great joy. And another feeling was the feeling of separation. Prabhupada doesn't analyze this deeply, but there is a difference between separation due to material affection and separation due to the loss of the association of a very dear living entity, a very dear soul, having the loss of that spiritual association. So he felt that. But he steadied his mind because he knew that this was good. The destination of Dhritarashtra, just as he had advised him, the right thing happened. So it was good. Certainly, zillions of times better than if he had stayed in the royal palace and died, you know, in misery, in his very, very attached condition. Very, very different result. One auspicious and the other very inauspicious result. So that he was guided by his intelligence, just as Prabhupada said in that previous purport, in order to become a pure devotee, one must be learned, detached. What was the third thing?
Faithful.
So, Vidura had those qualities. And then, when Narada related the whole thing to Yudhisthira also had some feelings about the whole thing. And Yudhisthira felt relieved. So now he knew that although his father, his uncle was gone, that good destination was being reached by him. And Narada was transcendental. Narada just narrated the whole thing, and the chapter ends. He strums on his veena and sails off to the next visit, wherever he's going to go. So, managing our emotions with the standards of Dharma and proper knowledge and spiritual strength, we all are challenged with that in our life. And it's just nice to note, of course, different positions, Gandhari, Vidura, Yudhisthira, and Narada, each hearing or knowing or seeing the same thing, and very, very different emotional reactions. But because of their particular exalted position, they manage those emotions in a nice way, appropriate for their circumstance. And that ends chapter 13. I'm going to fast forward for the last part. But. Okay, so there's a work day and a school day tomorrow. So we should end. I wish it was 7 o'clock, but it's 10 minutes to 8.
8 o'clock.
10 minutes to 8, right?
8 o'clock.
See where we go. Yes.
I got a question regarding seeing everything that's happening by the will of the Lord.
Yeah.
So, is that perception that things are happening by the will of the Lord only really accurate when we're in proper consciousness,
yeah,
allowing things to happen by the will of the Lord?
Yeah. Meaning, well, you want to give an example?
Like,
for example,
I fall asleep during Bhagavatam class. I should not say that Krishna's an angel. I should say that I'm an angel.
Yeah. Right.
So,
yeah. That's what I was thinking of when you, I mean, it wasn't that, that particular, but we make a mistake, or we neglect something, or something gets lost or stolen. Oh, it must be Krishna's will. I had a discussion about this with one devotee recently. It was their neglect, but they were camouflaging their neglect with something else. Oh, was that person's fault, or Krishna maybe didn't want us to have it, or you're going to neglect something that Krishna's property. Maybe he doesn't want you to have it. You don't know how to handle it properly. Yeah. But even in those kinds of Krishna, it's not, in those circumstances, it's not Krishna's will, but Krishna's sanction. Krishna's sanction is involved. Krishna's will is, follows his devotee. Or rather, his devotee follows Krishna's will. Yes, Arati?
You just mentioned the fact that we become joyful when the body liberation is given up to it, and the very distress that it's not given up.
Fan is a little loud. Don't turn it off because we'll suffocate. But speak a little louder.
In the course of the lecture, you mentioned the point that we become joyful when the body liberation is given up to it.
When the bodily relations are within our grip.
And the very distress practice.
Okay, okay.
So, I'm able to relate to that. In relation to other devotees, when circumstances come that I'm not able to, when the relation is strained or something, I become very distressed. And when it is nice, I become very joyful. So, I know, is it because of my bodily constitution?
I think it's number 8 over here on the board. Affected by duality. Happiness and distress. So if your consciousness, any one of us, if our consciousness was absorbed in Krishna, and then something happens in the realm of duality, we could first remain undisturbed because we're fixed in consciousness of Krishna, and then two, in that undisturbed consciousness, have a much clearer sense of how to act appropriately in the circumstance to uplift number 11 by our speech or action. But if I'm not fixed in Krishna consciousness, and then some circumstance arises from natural course out of the duality of this material world, then I'll be swayed by the duality of this material world, and I won't be clear about how to uplift the situation with action or speech. I'll be a conditioned soul, bobbing with the waves. Now the wave is up, ooh, now the wave is down. That's not a mark of one's insincerity, it's a mark of one's lack of spiritual advancement. So, sincerely, withdraw your attention from the temporary and place your attention on the eternal. That's the Bhagavatam message, this chapter, twice. Vidura to Dhritarashtra, Narada to Yudhisthira. Waves of the ocean are going to keep rolling. And you can lament. And you can celebrate when it's up and lament when it's down. Or you can recognize it's going to be up and down because that's what the waves of the ocean do. And place your consciousness with Krishna. And then when you place your consciousness with Krishna, you can be in a position where you can act in an uplifting way. Given the circumstance. Appropriate for the circumstance. In a mode of service. Service to Krishna and service to the individuals or the circumstances or combination. Yeah.
Maharaj, what kind of liberation did Dhritarashtra get? It seems that he had got the liberation of an Astanga yogi.
Yeah,
it doesn't, Atma realization?
Doesn't specify. I said it 3 times.
Yeah.
I researched it. I consulted with others who have taught this course. I looked for the commentaries. And I've not been able to find out what kind of liberation. I could speculate something. I'd rather not do that. It doesn't specify. He's liberated.
Usually, if the Ashtanga yogis, their perfection is, you know, the way they escape through the skull or something.
Yeah.
Well, where do they end up?
Yeah, but different things are said within the Bhagavatam. As I indicated, it's possible that they can go to a heavenly planet. It's possible that they can go to the Brahma Jyoti. It's possible that they can go to Vaikuntha. It depends on a lot of variables, namely what's in their heart. So in Dhritarashtra we can speculate. Sayuja Mukti. That's a speculation. I don't know from something authoritative from our acharyas. The reasoning behind the speculation is he hadn't cultivated bhakti. But it said specifically he was beyond the influence of any material thing. So it's kind of, the default is, it wasn't heaven, it wasn't Vaikuntha, so it leaves the middle place. It's a reasoned speculation. Yes?
Then if the
then just because she jumped into the same fire, she has to follow the disposition of her husband?
She chose, not has to. She chose. She didn't have to jump in the fire. She, whatever destination her husband achieved, she achieved. That's the idea. She wanted to follow and faithfully serve her husband. So he achieved liberation. So she achieved liberation. Yeah.
In the morning lecture, you said tapa.
Yeah, yeah.
So what is that? That is meaning of tapa, like doing fasting or what? What's the meaning?
Broad
of
meaning?
Tapa.
Well, you know, as you just said, it means, the category means acceptance of austerity. And austerities can include fasting, or it can include maintaining of a vow, a vrata, that's a kind of tapa. And another category that I was discussing this morning, and that is a tapa for a devotee of the Lord, is to, so devotees have humility. The natural quality of a Vaishnava is humility. So with that humility, one finds undesirable things in the heart. Because they are there. Or a very, very humble devotee, and very, very pure devotee, may just feel it, that they're very fallen. Not say that. We might say that, but they actually feel that. And to regret that bad thing that's there in my past, or a mistake that I may have made, or an offense that I have made, may have committed, something. According to one of our Vaishnava Acharyas, Bhaktivinod Thakur, he says that's a form of tapa, because it purifies. If we do it properly, it will help remove that thing, the reaction for that bad thing, and it'll help bring us beyond doing that bad thing again. That's a good kind of tapa, because generally tapa will just counteract the bad thing. It'll help to eradicate reactions of past sins. But a Vaishnava tapa takes us beyond just eradicating the bad thing to establishing ourselves in the good thing. Good conduct instead of just neutralizing the bad conduct. So, generally it means austerity. It's okay? Yes?
Can you tell how Vidura has feeling, the Yudhishthira has feeling, the Narada
was? Well, he had feelings. He was just in the mood of serving Krishna joyfully. He wasn't disturbed by any of it. He just, yeah, his feeling was bhakti, jubilant devotion. He had no attachment. He knew Dhritarashtra, he knew Yudhisthira, he knew Vidura, he had feelings, he knew Gandhari, he had feelings for those, but his position was just jubilant devotion. Vidura and Dhritarashtra, Vidura
and
Yudhisthira. Yeah, the contrast is that, put it in real simple language, Narada was more advanced. Narada was the spiritual master of Yudhisthira. Although Yudhisthira is being described here as a Narottama, was it was Emma was asking the question, what is this further purification business? But you know, Narada is in a further position. Narada, there's more exalted than Yudhishthira. Regularly he's coming to give counsel and instruction to Yudhishthira in ways of pure devotion. Like Prahlad, in his prayers to Lord Srinadev, he prays to Lord Srinadev, please instruct me further in the ways of devotional service. Further, 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 further. So Narada was, out of all those five, Narada is the furthest. Like in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it's very, very, that was going to be the topic for this weekend, but changed because of the circumstance. But in that Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it does make a comparative and superior and superlative description of different exalted souls. Narada is in a more exalted position. Anything else?
Maharaj, can it also be said that it is out of deep humility of a Vaishnava? He felt that, oh, I have inconvenienced the thrust.
Of course, of course.
So it's not just attachment. We would not just say,
that's right,
in case of
Yudhishthira. That's right. But at the same time, Narada, because Yudhishthira was the instrument of Krishna's will, he was feeling, I'm the cause. But what is that? Kartaham iti manyate. He was being reminded, it wasn't you're just the instrument. It was Krishna's will, and you were the instrument. Oh yeah, right, I was just the instrument, it was Krishna's will. It's humility, but there's something else there also. He plays that role. He plays the role of perfectly religious person. A perfectly religious person will see like that. And Narada is total transcendentalist. No, he incites Kamsa. He does things, you know, that are pretty far out. Because he has another, whatever the right word is, kind of attachment to Krishna. He has more freedom in his speech, in his actions, in his being a representative of the will of Krishna. Yudhishthira is representing a particular form of the will of Krishna. What is that? A perfectly religious human being. Perfectly religious human being, Yudhishthira. Here he is. And now, what's Narada's role of serving Krishna? The transcendentalist who's distributing bhakti like anything. A different function or capacity in serving. Yes?
So I was just adding it that maybe Vidura was more attached to Yudhishthira. That's sort of my understanding, that
maybe Vidura was more attached
with Yudhishthira and who bond with all the Yudhishthira, Arjuna and all, because they were doing the right thing and they were, Dharma was with them. But Yodhana, he was not with them. Wasn't attached with them more because they were always doing wrong. He was just doing his duty towards them, but they were doing the wrong thing.
Well, if you had been with us for the other sessions, you would have heard Prabhupada and Shukadev Goswami describe that Vidura's position, after hearing extensively from Maitreya and getting the association of Uddhava also. Oh, so he was completely beyond him. He was the emblem of a Narottama. So he wasn't, he had affection, but I was making the contrast, spiritual affection, which is different than material affection, or material attachment. Okay, so we're done. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Kishore Kishori ki jai.